This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers. Today, we are joined by Isaac Arnsdorf. He is a national political reporter for The Washington Post who covers former President Donald Trump, the MAGA movement, and those at the forefront of the Republican Party. His first book was just published, Finish What We Started, The MAGA Movement's Ground War to End Democracy. Isaac, thank you so much for being here and for passing judgment with us.
Thanks for having me.
So the first thing I want to ask you is, what do you think is the most misunderstood aspect of the MAGA movement?
I think it might be that it kind of came out of nowhere and is all about Trump. And I think a big finding of from my reporting in doing the book was both how much MAGA, as we thought about it in 2016, is super different from MAGA now, like how much the movement changed after January 6th and in the period where actually Trump was out of power, but also that there's this long continuity with a longer history in the US of like loosely this ideology or this kind of political tradition that we call MAGA today, but that really goes back to kind of something that existed but was more marginalized for a lot of decades. But understanding that that was there to begin with, I think helps understand how it could spread so far and so fast.
So you said a couple of things that I'd love to pick up on. One of them is that this has existed. Is there a name for the group or for the seeds of the group that became the MAGA movement that maybe people who are listening would be familiar with, or was it not quite that well organized that it was a named organization or group or movement?
Yeah, it's more that. I mean, you know, if you think about the companion motto, America First, dates back to the late 1930s. That was the name of the opposition to American intervention to help the Allies in World War II. So that's that same kind of, some people call it isolationist or non-interventionist position. And that's a key element of what we call MAGA today. And then if you bring it forward to kind of the dawn of the modern conservative movement with Barry Goldwater, a lot of the values of reaction to the New Deal, anti the large federal government, kind of liberal order, another key component, and part of that being the idea that that America is essentially and unmovably a conservative country, and basically if any election that says otherwise gets it wrong, and that's kind of if you start with that premise, kind of the logical extreme conclusion of that eventually gets you to the idea that the 2020 election was stolen.
So that's interesting because I had felt that there was this deep division between the Republican Party as it used to be, maybe in the 80s and 90s, and the Republican Party as it is now, which seems to me to be overtaken by MAGA, but it doesn't seem, in my view, to have the same guiding principles of, I guess we'll call it your grandfather's Republican Party or your father's Republican Party, the more, in my mind, predictable policies of smaller government, lower taxes, more stringent immigration policies, fewer environmental controls, the social conservatism. Is that view wrong? Is there actually more of a coherent view of the government and government policies than maybe I'm seeing here?
Well, you're right that that Trump's Republican Party is a huge break from Reagan's Republican Party. But part of that is because we have this recency bias about Reagan's Republican Party being the baseline. But actually, if you take a longer view, then a lot of what Trump picked up on goes back before. And like Reagan kind of held this coalition together with this sunny, small government, optimistic conservatism, and Trump is kind of rejecting the optimism and reaching back to some of the harsher edges of an older conservative tradition.
So maybe the issue is that for a lot of people who are voting now, the comparison baseline is wrong, I think is what I hear you saying, which is really look back pre Reagan, and that maybe this Republican Party looks more like an earlier iteration of a Republican Party.
A constituency within the Republican Party, but one that was marginalized, one that the mainstream Republican Party affirmatively said, we don't want that to represent the Republican Party. And then it kind of had its chance with Goldwater, and that was an electoral disaster. And it survived in a form, right? And like it sort of, Pat Buchanan was kind of the standard bearer for that strand for a while. But, you know, Pat Buchanan is no Donald Trump. And it really took someone with Trump's political talent to popularize it the way that Reagan popularized his kind of conservatism.
So I want to go all the way back to what I thought was going to be my second question when we first started talking. And you said that the MAGA movement has changed since January 6th. And I'm wondering if you could talk to us about how that is. And maybe it's because it was more of an organic movement leading up to January 6th, or maybe it was actually much more organized, but just from the bottom up. But I'm curious as to how in the last, 3.5 years, the movement really has shifted.
Yeah. So what happened starting in 2020 as a function of a lot of genuine crisis and turmoil, the pandemic, the George Floyd protests, and the election, and how those interacted with each other. You had a combination of Trump, rather than marginalizing, welcoming in the more extreme elements of the American right, and then also a radicalizing of the existing rank and file, right? So it's both that more extreme people get brought in, and the people who are already in become more extreme. And so the MAGA movement that you have coming out of Trump's presidency looks a lot more like demographically looks a lot more like the Republican Party going into Trump's presidency, rather than like if you think about what we thought of as Trump's base in 2016. And it was in that period right after January 6th where Trump was actually out of power and not the leading driver of this. It was something that the grassroots was doing for itself, to a large part with the guiding hand of Steve Bannon, but trying to process what had happened on January 6th and what to do about it. And the solution that Bannon provided was that the movement needed to take over the party. And that probably sounds confusing because people think Trump already took over the party. But as the story goes, the lesson the movement learned from January 6th was the reason they failed was because of a few uncooperative Republicans. And by the way, that's not wrong. If you think about the few pressure points where Republicans stood up and refused to go along with it, and that's why Trump was not able to keep himself in power. And so the answer that they came to was that they needed to take over the party, purify the party. And that was a bottom-up phenomenon, something that started at the bottom of the party pyramid at the precinct level and then worked its way up the chain all the way to the Republican National Committee.
I want to ask where you think this is going, depending on the election results. But before we get there, you've spent a lot of time reporting and talking to members of the movement. And to me, the book is a real contribution because it's not another book on Trump. It's a book on the movement, and it's a book on explaining, as you just did, the movement as not really top down, but again, bottom up as a grassroots movement. And in talking to members of the movement, I mean, I think this is always my question, which is there anything that could move the people who are part of the movement out of it? Because from my perspective, a lot of what they believe is not actually the case. The election wasn't stolen. There was no rampant fraud. Now, some of the things are matters of opinion, and some of the things seem to me to be truth and fact versus falsity. So in talking to them, is this a group where, you know, is there something that can move them off of, out of the movement?
So the way that Bannon actually basically explained it to me, or the way that I came to understand it from talking with him and then going off and reading the philosophers and the thinkers who he said were influencing him, is that the ideological content is actually a lot less important than the need to identify with a cause and the search for belonging, and that there is a very real hole that people are feeling in their lives, a failure of government to address the problems that people are living in their lives, and a breakdown in community bonds and social ties, which has been a decades long phenomenon in American life. Those are real. Those are not imaginary. And that is the hole that Bannon is shoveling nationalism into. And that is a very compelling and attractive pull for a lot of people, but it's not necessarily the only one. And I think Biden actually thinks about things in similar terms with how he has approached his presidency as trying to make the case that democratic governance can work for people. But his challenge has been delivering on that and or convincing people that he has delivered on that.
Yeah, it seems to me that those are actually two really different things, although in politics they're joined, which is delivering versus convincing people that you're delivering. And it's interesting in hearing you talk about this, and you said, and Biden is trying to do something similar. And that was my perspective too, which is the way you describe the MAGA movement, in a strange way, it's wanting a stronger bond with government and wanting a stronger bond with people who are members of the community. And it does seem to come back to this word that we use too often, probably, of tribalism. And I wonder if, given what you've seen in movement, what your view of its long-term prospects are. I don't think it's fair necessarily to say who's going to win the 2024 election, but I'm happy for you to make a prediction if you want to. But how viable do you think the movement is, given that, and I've heard you say this and write about this, it's not a movement that is attracting moderates and independents and disaffected Democrats.
Well, I'm not going to make a prediction, but I do think that the point of channeling the movement into the party organization, as they've done in the past few years, was to make it more durable. And giving it that institutional home means that it can outlast Trump, because it's not just a cult of personality around a single person anymore. And that's, you know, what parties exist to do. So I do think that gives it a staying power. And I also think, you know, without making a prediction about the election, it's going to be a close one. And, you know, it's probably one way or the other going to defy any kind of final verdict, right? Like, in a close election, like the ones that we've been having, and, you know, you get kind of a mixed bag with outcomes that kind of point in multiple directions.
So let's talk about those potential outcomes without predicting them, but based on what you know of the MAGA movement and your research in the book, if Biden wins by all objective standards, what happens? Because as I heard you describe it, January 6th was not successful based on really just a few Republicans who held the line, or maybe I would describe it as adhered to the Constitution. I mean, different ways of describing what happened. But what happens if there's an election that's close, but there is, in fact, a discernible winner, and that discernible winner is President Biden?
Well, so Trump wouldn't have the powers of the presidency to try to wield to overturn the result like he did in 2020. He would have a more disciplined and unified party. So, you know, you would see legal challenges that, and you know, this is based on the preparations that Republicans are making now. You would see legal challenges that would be more serious than the ones that they kind of scrambled to throw together in 2020. And I mean, again, this is, you know, Trump himself has said very clearly in a recent interview that he's not ruling out political violence as a response if he loses and doesn't accept it. You know, I also remain very concerned about, apologies for spoilers for people who are behind on Succession, but a scenario like in the last season there, where there's some kind of disruption, not in the certification phase, but in the casting or counting phase that makes it impossible to recover an actual, free and fair outcome.
Do you want to expand on that and talk about specific examples that you're worried about? Because I think people might hear that. And I mean, I have some ideas of what I'm concerned about, but what should we be looking for in that crucial period?
Well, I'm hesitating because I was also very concerned about this in the midterms and it didn't end up happening. You know, you saw people, you know, showing up around ballot drop boxes with binoculars and dogs and guns and kind of being intimidating. You saw protests outside of counting facilities that were threatening, but it didn't. It was an election that actually ran very smoothly. And so, you know, I don't want to get overly alarmist, but you know, the other change that's been made since 2020 is cleaning up some of the ambiguities in federal law about the certification process to prevent trying to overturn the outcome in Congress, like in 2021. But still, there remains these foreseeable, very concerning scenarios where if something goes really wrong in the actual voting or tabulation, you get a genuine outcome that you get
the outcome might not reflect what actually.
Well, it could be impossible to know what the real outcome would have been.
Yes, I share those concerns. And what about the other side of the scenario as we kind of conclude our chat based on what you've researched and written about with respect to the movement? Trump wins, and it is discernible. They count up the ballots, they're certified, some people are shocked, but it's discernible. It's just like 2016. Will there be another election that is a, quote, free and fair election in this country? I mean, does Trump leave after 4 years, or based on what you know of the power of the movement, does this become the last election that looks anything like the kind that we've had since the founding of our country? I mean, does he just say, I'm in, and that's that?
Well, Trump has said that he would leave and he's not interested in serving more than one more term. But he's also been very clear about how he wants to govern for that term. And that both means changing how elections are run in ways that would advantage Republicans and make it harder for them to lose in the future. It also means using the power of the federal government against political opposition, meaning that he wants to use federal law enforcement against specifically identified critics, and that he would deploy the military against public protests. And in both cases, those are things that he talked about doing in the first term, but was ultimately thwarted or restrained or distracted by people around him. And those people are not getting invited back. The people who would re-enter the administration with him would be people who would carry out those orders.
Well, that is a somewhat ominous note to end on. So I think what people might be asking is, again, based on your deep experience with the movement and your understanding of national politics, is there anything that you think can be done to maybe combat what we see? Because the title of the book, Finish What We Started, the MAGA Movement's Ground War to End Democracy, is there a way that you can think of that we can maintain democracy?
Well, I mean, it's not really for me to make prescriptions as a reporter. I guess the first step is always to try to understand what is happening, understand how the process works, what the vulnerabilities are, and what the opportunities for participation are, but also understanding why ending democracy, whether people in the movement articulate it that way exactly, or, you know, use other terminology, but why it would be so appealing to so many Americans to have a second Trump administration like the one I described.
That was a great answer to an unfair question. So Isaac Arnsdorf, national political reporter for The Washington Post, we didn't this episode get into your reporting, although I'd love to in a different episode. We focused on your first book, Finish What We Started, the MAGA Movement's Ground War to End Democracy. It's just out. I want to recommend it to everybody who's listening. And this was a great teaser for so much more that is in the book. So, Isaac, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.